Welcome to Lit Talks with Lauren, where I dive deep in your favorite books with fellow bookies and talk all about the best parts. This episode, I will be discussing the first three parts of the book, Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo, with my friend and book nerd, Mandy. First things first, if you have not read this book, spoilers ahead, listen at your own discretion. In the first part of this book, we get a lot of background information. We learn about the Crows, a group of teenage misfits from Ketterdam who have been brought together by their leader, Kaz Brekker, aka Dirty Hands, to retrieve a scientist by the name of Bol-Yor Byer that has created a drug called Jiraparem that makes Grisha extremely strong and powerful, but also makes them addicted and usually will end up killing them. In return, the Crows will receive 20 million Kruga, their term for dollars. Grisha are humans who have special powers and are sorted into three orders, Corporal Key, Ethereal Key, and Material Key, with each order being further divided into special types. The author, Leigh Bardugo, does a great job of showing this world after a great war and how it has affected other populations in other countries surrounding Ravka. She shows the healing process as well as how even though the fold is gone, there are still political issues and talks of war with other countries. How could this unrest affect the Crows and their plot in these books?
I guess post-war, I mean, that's where we're at, and I feel that the post-war world is the reason that the Crows are able to do what they do. I mean, I know Ketterdam is its own separate place, but because that there's unrest elsewhere, when you have a country that's not working the way it should, then thieves or the bad guys, the misfits, right? The people in the dregs are able to, those gangs are able to get away with stuff. And when you have a perfectly functioning army and all of those things, they're not going to be able to do what they do. They're not going to be able to pirate the way they do. And so I think, honestly, the post-war world gives the Crows the perfect opportunity to function as the Crows. And we get to see them kind of in their full glory because they're taking advantage of all that stuff. You know, they're not invested in what's going on politically elsewhere. They're invested in themselves. And so they're using that world to their advantage to, like, prey on those things, essentially. I think that's how they could use it.
How do you think this drug will affect the Crows if it becomes prominent?
Yeah, this drug takes the Grisha and then it multiplies them. Even though the Grisha have powers, I think that the Crows are able to equally match them and kind of fight them or do what they need to do with the Grisha. But Grisha on the Jiraparem, that's on a whole nother level. So I think it's going to unleash hell, honestly. And the Crows are going to have a whole different ballgame on their hands of how do they fight that? How do they work within Grisha, who are that powerful? I mean, because they're essentially they're just human as far as we know. And how are they going to get away with thieving and doing what they got to do within their clubs if they have Grisha on such a powerful drug to contend with?
A wealthy merchant and member of the merchant council, Jean Vanek, has hired these thieves to retrieve Bol-Yor Byer from the neighboring country, Fjerda, who are notorious warriors and haters of Grisha. Kaz Brekker, a very good thief and gang leader, gathers a team consisting of his right-hand woman and spy, the Wraith, a.k.a. Inej Gaffa, his sharpshooter, Jasper Fahey, Nina Zenik, a corporal-keyed Grisha, Wylan, a demolitions expert, and Matthias Helvar, a prisoner who was once a Driskella loyal to Fjerda. There is much more to these characters than meets the eye. We figure out the first step to their plan is to break Matthias out of prison because he knows the inner workings of the Fjerdan Ice Court and how to get in. We also find out about Nina and Matthias's rocky history. Nina and Matthias's history made me wonder about how their relationship would play out throughout this book and if they could put their differences aside for the job. What would they do afterwards? I asked Mandy her opinion.
Well, I really think that Matthias and Nina's stories will be intertwined by the end of this all. I think we've been set up too much with their storyline and knowing everything in the background. So I do personally think that they are going to end up back together. But I also don't necessarily consider Nina a part of the Crows. So I don't think that that's like a problem with, like you said, Matthias is definitely not integrated into the Crows. So it's not like he's going to go back to Ketterdam. I think that their relationship's going to be mended and then they're going to do their own thing. I don't know, it's interesting too, because Nina has become so close to some of the Crows. Like, Inej, they're definitely forming a relationship, so, like, will Nina feel some sort of loyalty or want to stay with them? I don't know. But right now it's kind of a business transaction, even though I definitely don't think it's a business transaction between them.
Kedar Dam is where the Crows are from and is the capital of the country Kerch, but it kind of falls within its own category. Kedar Dam does what Kedar Dam wants, especially when you're in the barrel, the pleasure district of the capital. What are your thoughts on the atmosphere of Kedar Dam in comparison to the locations in the original trilogy, Shadow and Bone, and what makes this place so much different?
Kedar Dam's just got this dark twist to it. It's kind of the forgottens go there, the nobodies go there, but yet they somehow make up something there. You know, you've got all these clans of misfits. I guess that's how I view it. And I think that's why we get such fun storylines, because at the Little Palace, there's order to everything. You know, if you're at the Little Palace, you're Grisha and you're within your Grisha clan and you follow the orders. Or, you know, growing up at the orphanage for Alina, obviously that's more of a day-to-day life of everyday people, just living their lives. But Kedar Dam, yeah, it's where the misfits go. And so you kind of just get this hodgepodge of people. And I definitely think that there is dark past for nearly everybody there, and everyone's just scrounging around to survive. And so it's very interesting because you almost know every character you meet in there are fighting their way to something, or they fought their way into Kedar Dam almost.
If we want to break it down, this deal or heist is essentially one country stealing an asset from another. This could cause an all-out war if the Crows are successful. Do you think that the Crows would benefit from the other countries fighting about this drug and its effects on the citizens?
Who's to say that they won't just use it to their advantage? I mean, if the other countries got in on it and became this big trading thing and a money scheme, would Kazbrekker not just get his hands in on that and use it as a way to capitalize and make money? You know, what if he was the one selling, distributing, etc.? So I think that there could be a potential for them to benefit if the other countries, you know, if people were addicted. I mean, you're going to make money off of drugs somehow, right? And so, I don't know, Kaz is a schemer. I'm out for myself. I'm out for my gold, you know? So it might be interesting to see how he would potentially use that for his gain. Because at the end of the day, if a drug's going to get passed around, it's going to get passed around. So what would the Crows do with it?
Do you agree with the ethics of them gaining off of the deaths of Grisha on the drug?
Ooh, well, are the Crows ethical? You know, that's kind of the broader question. And I think, you know, as you read the book, you undoubtedly fall in love with these characters despite their morally gray attributes. But do they follow the ethics that we would follow? Do they follow the ethics that we saw in the first trilogy, you know, of Alina and Mal, who are definitely guided by good? Or is it almost more like the Darkling of, I follow my own code of ethics. I follow my own what serves me. And I definitely think it's more that. I mean, we've seen from Kaz, he does not hold back, and they get the job done, essentially, and they're out for themselves and for gold. And so I'm not sure that those ethics would follow for them as much as it would be, it's their choice to take the drug, so it's their consequence to reap.
What about Inej, Nina, and Wylan, who have a more morally good code of ethics? Do you think they would rebel against Kaz if he called their morals into question?
Kaz has that darker streak compared to some of the other Crows. But I think the answer as to whether the other Crows would follow the darker ethics is, what are their stakes? Because, you know, Inej is technically not free. That's why she's in this to begin with. She is working towards getting the gold at the end of this plot line of when they capture the scientist, turn him in, and she's using that to buy her freedom. So I would argue she might be done after this mission. But then when looking at Wylan, we don't really know his story. And so I think whether they would go along with it is whether or not they have stake in it somehow. And while they may not agree with it, if there's an end to a means in some way, I think that's what they do on a day-to-day anyways. They kind of write off some of their darker happenings as, well, this is an end to my means. And so, you know, with Nina, she's working towards getting Matthias out. That's what we know. If working in the plotline with Kaz, you know, got her there or somehow boosted her in a way that she wanted, would she not follow the darker ethics of the Grisha dying when they're on it and things like that?
Let's talk about Wylan for a second. In part two, we find out that Wylan is Van Eck's son. He ran away from home and has been on the streets of Kedar Dam. Wylan has maintained a clean record and stayed out of trouble so far. So how did he end up with the dregs? Well, Kaz knew immediately when he was on the streets and has been protecting him ever since because he knew he would come in handy someday. Kaz is always one step ahead and maintains this power role within the dregs, but the technical leader of the dregs isn't Kaz. It's Per-Heskel, who we barely know. So why is Kaz portrayed as the leader when really it's Per-Heskel? Mandy has a theory she'd like to share about this.
I think for a long time, you know, Per-Heskel was the one running it, and it's kind of this, oh, Kaz is my prodigy, he's the one who kind of goes and does my dirty work. But we actually found out at one point that he told Kaz to not pursue the Jurapartum mission. And why? You know, there is so much gold to be found in that mission. Why would he tell him not to? And it kind of just brings up this thought process for me of what if Per-Heskel is not this big leader that he used to be? What if someone is paying him off? What if he is in someone's pocket? You know, he's not this big man on the street anymore, but someone like Van Eck is saying, I have control over you now for whatever reason. Maybe he has something on him. Maybe he's paying him off. I don't know. But they want him to still appear in charge, but he's not. We know that Kaz is the one running the game. So it's just interesting to me. And I just wonder if he's being paid off for some reason and trying to deter Kaz from going after these things because someone higher up wants Kaz to do something different and is trying to play the game. And he's using Per-Heskel as a piece on the board. But Kaz is a wild card and you can't control Kaz. And we know he has more power. So is he going to rise up? Is he going to take over? You know, I'm curious who's really in charge here and what's really going on behind the scenes. Because why would he tell him not to go on that mission?
Now, let's really break down some of these characters. We learn that they are all pretty young, with Matthias being the oldest at 18. And yet they have built up a pretty developed reputation behind their names at such a young age. Does the author portray their age and experience in the world? How?
In the books, I remember their ages getting said, but the way the characters portray themselves is much older. And you have to wonder if it goes back to that, you know, the post-war world building of they grew up in a realm that was not normal and functioning. It was after a giant war, you know? And so their maturity is going to look a little bit different. It was very surprising to me because when I saw the characters in the show, they don't look 15, 16, and definitely not 18 for Matthias. And so it almost put a weird perspective of then making me think back to the book of like, wow, they really were that young technically in the book. But these people I'm looking at in the show look more to be early to mid 20s. Yeah, it's kind of weird because their actions in the book are just so much older. And especially Kaz, thinking about how graphic some of the things that he does and how he will do whatever he has to make things happen. And it's pretty grueling at different points. And so you have to wonder, like, what did that 15, 16-year-old go through to be willing to do those things and not question it? Because when I was that old, trust me, I was not thinking of some of those things. And so, but it was interesting because I almost didn't question it in the books. You just kind of hear their age and then you're just like, yeah. But then seeing the characters visually in the show definitely put a different spin on their ages as well as made me question, you know, wow, the author wrote them this young. So did she really mean to like write them this young? And does that mean that they've been through that much stuff up until that age in order to do some of those things?
In chapter 12, the crows get ambushed as they're trying to leave Ketterdam. In the fight, Inej gets stabbed. She has a moment where she believes she's going to die and thinks about her past at the Menagerie and how it's better to die fighting than submissive and being someone who is false to who she actually is. What were your thoughts in this moment?
So Inej is such a strong character, and not that I can really relate it to something specific in my life, but I just resonate with that thought process of at least she's dying with her own freedom and fighting in her own way rather than at the hands of someone else, in the sense of she was having to play a game at the Menagerie. You know, she was having to work in a very specific way, but now she's working on her own terms in her own way, and she's going to die doing that. And honestly, I think in that moment, she's probably full of just kind of pride for herself and feeling proud of, you know, I may be young, I may be dying, whatever, but I got myself here and I am the reason I'm in this situation. It's not someone else calling the shots and someone else saying, this is your time. She's fighting for it actively. But then we see Kaz come in, and obviously she doesn't die in this moment, and he comes in and pulls her out of that. And so he was kind of like a lifeline in that sense of, you know, yeah, this isn't your way out. You're not the only one fighting for yourself. You are part of something. You're part of the Crows. And I'm going to pull you out of this. And so you start kind of thinking more about their relationship and don't know where it's going, but there has been hints of so much between them. And it's so small. And every little tidbit I get, I'm just, I need it. I want more. And you just want to figure out what's going on between them. And I think that this is a key moment in realizing, I think there's something more because of the way Kaz handled that. And Kaz doesn't touch anyone, but he was willing to do it. He was willing to save her. And then you question, you know, would he do that for Jesper? Would he do that for like one of the other Crows? I don't know. There seems to be something particular about this.
When Kaz saves her and won't let anybody touch her or take her away from him and insists they find Nina so she can heal Inej, we finally get some strong emotions from Kaz that we haven't gotten yet. And it's in conjunction with Inej being injured. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, when Kaz was carrying her and Jesper tries to come up and he's like, no, don't touch her. You go do something else, but this is my job. And that really is the first time that we see something from Kaz that is not business orderly. I'm thinking of myself. You get a sliver of emotion, which is really funny because you don't really get emotion in that moment, but as you've followed Kaz throughout the book, you realize that this is a sense of emotion from him and this is fear. He's feeling something right here, and it all has to do with Inej. And you kind of start building this picture of Kaz of, okay, so he's not so cold-hearted. He's not so closed off. He's not without his fears about things. Everybody has their weakness. So is this one his? Is this the one thing that will strike fear in Kaz Brekker?
In part 3, we finally get more of Kaz's backstory and find out that Jordy is Kaz's older brother. But we still don't know how Jordy dies or why Kaz is so afraid of physical touch. My theory is that maybe he was violated in some way with physical touch, which makes him untrustworthy of any touch. What are your thoughts or theories?
I loved that we finally got a bigger part of Kaz's story because I just love Kaz, but there's so much mystery to him and we're still trying to figure it out. So learning more that, okay, so him and Jordy, they were together, they were brothers, that's who this character is. And then, you know, they got swindled hard. But for me at this point, I could be totally off base, but I am on this thought train of, okay, so Kaz has a weird thing about touching people, right? He doesn't want that skin-on-skin contact. He wears his gloves all the time. And you have to question, did he play a role in Jordy's death? You know, did something happen to where, I don't know, out of anger, situation, maybe someone gets to Kaz and turns him against Jordy? Like, I have no idea, but like, did Kaz kill his brother? And then now it's kind of this thing of, I don't touch anyone, but I mean, he kills other people, so I don't know. But that's kind of the big question I have because Jordy, just the way he keeps getting brought up, there's so much trauma and pain, and it's definitely connected to why Kaz won't touch people.
We also finally get the full story of the dynamic between Nina and Matthias, an interesting and compelling one to be sure. We find out that there is lots of miscommunication between the relationship and what makes it so rocky now. Both sides have a lot to atone for. Whose side do you think made the better choices, or what side would you side with?
So, I mean, first I just have to comment on the tension. You just gotta love Nina and Matthias.
Oh, we love them.
Their whole story has been one of my favorites so far, just because the dynamics of them was so fun to read about, and it was the most just interactive and dramatic, I guess, kind of. And there was just so much push and pull. I mean, enemies to lovers, you just love it. Anyways, okay, so whose side would I take? Honestly, I would have to say I would kind of pick Nina's, because when you see why she did what she did, her feelings towards him were never tainted. So yes, she put him in a bad position, but it was because she was looking out for him. And so Matthias hates Nina because he doesn't see the full picture. but she saw the full picture. It's not like her heart changed towards him and then she was like, oh, just kidding, I'm gonna ditch this guy, right? Like, she did what she did out of caring for him, and I know it seemed bad, but he doesn't understand that. And so, I mean, would you not do the same thing for someone you love, potentially putting them into the lesser of two evils, them either being dead versus, okay, yeah, you're in a tough situation, but I can potentially get you out. There's redemption. There's still a storyline here. And so in that sense, I definitely am on Nina's side, but I can see why Matthias is angry. But I also think that he hasn't heard her out and he's hurt, honestly. And that's why he's mad, is because he loves her. He doesn't hate her. But it is really funny to watch him try to hate her.
Now let's jump over to the TV show adaptation of the Grishaverse. Season 1 of Shadow and Bone goes a little off-kilter from the books. What are your thoughts on the producer's take and how they incorporated the crows into Shadow and Bone?
I personally really enjoyed having the crows characters as well as the Shadow and Bone characters, just because from reading the books, I have fallen in love with the crows, and so getting to watch them and put eyes on them in the same way that I'm getting to watch the Shadow and Bone characters was just really fun. And the producers did take a little bit of a different storyline, but it was all new things and kind of just introducing the crows in their own way at the same timeline of Shadow and Bone. And so honestly, it was really cool because it was like getting the book, but like a whole different storyline that wasn't in the book. So it was just kind of extra material, but I really enjoyed it.
There's a lot to unpack from these characters in the first three parts of Six of Crows. We have so many questions and paths to figure out. Will they complete the mission? What will happen with Nina and Matthias? Will Inej and Kaz finally admit their feelings? What about the deal with Wyland's father, Van Eck? How will it all go down? Check out the second part of Lit Talks with Lauren, and I will wrap up this book in the last three parts, and we will find out just how the crows fly.